Well, we're still in the Christmas season. Today is Epiphany Sunday, and we're talking about angels in our current message series because there are countless angels involved in the Christmas story, including the visit by the wise men to baby Jesus today when you read between the lines. Now, you may believe that angels are figments of an overactive imagination, but they are actually part of Catholic doctrine, and the Bible itself contains more than 300 references to angels. So let's briefly go over what we know so far about angels. First of all, angels are created beings. God made them just as he made humans. And like us, angels are individuals, each with a unique personality and a distinct character. They also have intelligence and free will like we do, but they are also different from us. Angels are not people, nor are they people who have died. You don't die and become an angel. If you've ever said, hey, I'm no angel, you're absolutely right, and you never will be. Also, angels are different from us because they don't have physical bodies like we do. They are pure spirits, and they live in a spiritual realm. But occasionally, they break into the physical world when God gives them a mission to complete on earth. And that's the other thing to know about angels. They are sent to help us in many different ways. On Christmas Eve, we looked at the first way that angels help us. And we said that they bring messages of comfort and joy to people in difficult circumstances. Throughout the Bible, angels have sustained patriarchs and prophets and have carried the message of God's love and concern to many people in times of discouragement. They even announced the birth of Jesus, bringing glad tidings of great joy to lowly shepherds. Then last week, on the Feast of the Holy Family, we discovered another function of angels. They protect people. Angels guided the Israelites to the Promised Land. They scared off enemy forces surrounding the prophet Elisha. They looked after Jesus in the desert. But, as we said, their protection extends beyond the great stories of the Bible because each individual soul has a guardian angel, and that includes you and me. Guardian angels encourage, protect, and care about you. They nudge you in the right direction. They try to keep you from making fatal mistakes. And they pray for you. And we said you can imitate your angel by doing the same thing for others, perhaps even people in your own family. Now today we're going to look at a third function angels perform for us. And this one I find fascinating, I hope you do too, because it could very well open up a whole new realm in your spiritual life that you may have overlooked. So let's jump into the gospel story today to see what we can learn. The story begins like this. When Jesus was born in Bethlehem in the days of King Herod, behold, magi from the east arrived in Jerusalem. Now, the magi, you may be more familiar with the common term wise men. They're often called wise men, but they were actually magi, and they came from what is now modern-day Iran to the east of Jerusalem. And they were members of a priestly caste from the ancient Median and Persian empires. A little more about them in a minute. And when the magi arrived in Jerusalem, they asked King Herod, "Where is the newborn king of the Jews? We saw his star at its rising and have come to do him homage." So far in the story, we have wise men and we have a star. And then comes the third element, a murderous king and a dream. When King Herod heard this, he was greatly troubled, the Bible says. See, he was not a Jewish king. He was a foreigner who had been given authority by the Roman Empire to rule over the Jews. So he was in a very precarious situation. But now, with the arrival of the Magi asking the location of the newborn king of the Jews, Herod obviously felt threatened. And so what do you do when you feel threatened? You do what anybody would do. You hatch an evil plan. And his plan had three steps. The first is he assembled all the chief priests and the scribes, and he asked them where the child was to be born. He needed to know where the child would be born and when the child was born in order to find him and kill him. So the scribes and the priests told him that he would be born in Bethlehem. That was the ancient prophecy contained in Scripture. The prophet Micah predicted that. Now that Herod knew the location, he just needed to know how old the child was in order to search for him and dispose of this newborn king in rather short order. So he asked the wise men when the star had appeared. Now you may wonder, why did he ask that if the wise men visited Jesus right after his birth? Well, some scholars believe that the Magi's visit actually came some considerable time after Jesus was born, perhaps even as late as when Jesus was a toddler, which would explain Herod's question, when did they first see the star? Because he was trying to figure out how old Jesus was, who to look for. Then the third step of his evil plan was to try to get the Magi to do his dirty work. Go and search diligently for the child, he told them, and when you have found them, bring me word that I too may go and do him homage. It's a plot as thick as a Disney movie, but the plot thickens even more. The Magi eventually find Jesus and they offer him their gifts, but then, having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed for their country by another way. So, we've got a star, we've got Magi, and we got a murderous king and a dream. Now, the story doesn't directly refer to angels, but when you read between the lines, you can see that their fingerprints are all over this story. There is a ton of circumstantial evidence. So let's start with the star. Every year at Epiphany, you know, there's a lot of attention put on the star. What is the star? What does it mean? Where did it come from? And over the years, scientists and theologians have endeavored to figure out whether there actually was an astronomical anomaly around the time Jesus was born. Now, there is some evidence for it, but unfortunately, the evidence is not entirely clear. But some scholars have proposed another theory about the star, and you may not have ever heard of it. They say the star guiding the Magi may actually have been an angel. An angel. Now, before you disregard this out of hand, they offer the following evidence. The Jewish tradition very commonly associates angels with stars. And in fact, in several places in the Bible, angels are referred to as stars. But then there's something else. Many centuries earlier, there was a prophet who actually predicted the star that the Magi would follow. The prophet's name was Balaam, and his story is weird. Let me tell you about it. Balaam was not a good prophet, not at all. He was a mercenary. He was a prophet for hire. And the king of a small nation called Moab hired Balaam to come to Moab and curse the Israelites who were crossing the desert into his land. He didn't like it. He wanted the Israelites cursed. So Balaam saddled his donkey and started off for Moab. But soon, the animal began swerving off the road. Then he swerved again and again, and each time Balaam beat her with a stick mercilessly. Suddenly, the donkey spoke and asked him, why was he beating her? And as they were arguing, the reason for the animal's behavior became apparent. It was a fearsome angel standing in the middle of the road with his sword drawn and aimed right at Balaam's neck. That donkey literally saved his life. So you tell me, who was the ass in that story? Anyway, the angel warned Balaam to speak only what God told him to say. But when Balaam finally got to Moab, he disregarded the angel's instructions. And he tried to curse Israel. But each time he tried, only words of blessing came out instead. This happened three times. And then he was allowed to make one final utterance. And this one was the most important. It was a prophecy about a future king who would come from Israel. And this king would be the great Messiah. And the sign of this king's birth, Balaam said, would be a star rising in the sky. And it was the same star the Magi followed 1,200 years later. So here again, we have an angel appearing to Balaam and connecting it to the star. Then there's the second element in the story, the Magi. Now, the Magi were very unlikely visitors because they had a troubled history with the Jewish people. The Magi were the ones who interpreted dreams for their kings. And 600 years before Jesus came, there was this prophet, this young man named Daniel. There's a whole book about him in the Bible. And he, along with other leading figures of Jewish society, were exiled to Babylon. And when the Magi there in Babylon could not interpret one of their own king's dreams, this Jewish man, Daniel, was called in. And having been told about the king's dream in a night vision, Daniel was able to tell the king both what his dream was and what it meant. It must have really embarrassed the Magi. And here's the kicker. Throughout the story in the book of Daniel, guess who comes to explain visions to Daniel over and over again? That's right. Once again, it's the angels. A coincidence, perhaps, but maybe one large, too large to ignore. Then there's the dream the Magi had. This is the strongest evidence. The dream the Magi had, telling them not to return to Herod. Now, several times in the Bible, angels appear to people in dreams. The patriarch Jacob had a vision of angels going up and down a ladder to heaven, and he had this vision in a dream. Angels appeared to Joseph, Jesus' foster father, four times. In fact, in the very next verse after this passage, Joseph has a dream delivered by an angel who told him to flee to Egypt, get Jesus out of there because Herod was going to kill him. So doesn't it stand to reason that it probably was an angel who delivered this message to the Magi while they slept? Because that's what angels do. That's the third function of angels. They speak to us in our dreams sometimes. Angels visit us at night with messages from above. Now, if you don't believe that, let's take a look at what dreams actually are. Dreaming is a normal biological process. You probably know that, but you may not know the rather unusual effects it has on you. Every night when you dream, and yes, you dream every night, you start seeing things that aren't there. You believe things that can't be true. You become confused about where you are, what you are doing, what day it is, and who is with you. You experience extreme emotional swings, and then you wake up and you forget about everything that happened. Now, if you had had these symptoms during the day, you would have been diagnosed as psychotic. But in fact, your brain does this on purpose every night. Every night, it systematically shuts down areas that manage rational thought and activates more primitive centers governing your emotions and your memories. And there's two reasons that your brain does this, two benefits that scientists have discovered from this process. First of all, dreams serve as a form of overnight therapy. They nurse our hurts and soothe our anxieties. They take the painful sting out of the emotional traumas you may have suffered during the day, and they provide resolution when you wake up the next morning. Say somebody criticizes you at work or at school. Dreaming allows you to safely relive the memory, but without having the same visceral reaction to it. It's like overnight emotional rehabilitation so that you're able to recall important events that have happened to you, but without being crippled by all that emotional baggage that may come with those events. But the act of dreaming has another benefit as well. It inspires creativity and promotes problem solving. from the periodic table of the elements to the DNA molecule to the great Google itself, some of the most important advances in human knowledge have come to people at night while they were sleeping. Whenever I hit a wall in studying for a test, my mom would always say, "Sleep on it." She didn't say, "Stay up all night." She said, "Sleep on it." And she was right. That's because dreaming bypasses the usual logical associations that we make between ideas, and it creates these new innovative connections between the knowledge that's already stored in our memory banks and new information that we take in through the day. So, why is this important for angels? Because it's in this highly suggestible state that angels are able to pass on important information from God and even warn us of impending danger, like they did with Joseph and the Magi in the story today. Now, of course, it doesn't happen all the time. In fact, it's probably quite rare. Some people have told me that they've experienced dreams with angels. Most of you probably have not. After all, dreams are mostly a natural, not a supernatural phenomenon, but it does happen. I came across this great story by a prominent pastor who told the story of his wife's nocturnal encounter with angelic beings. One night, she said, four angels came to her in a dream. They were all dressed in black. Even their wings were black. They were in mourning, they told her, because you are dying, they said. And unless something is done, you are going to die. Well, his wife had refused to go to the doctor for many years. She didn't like the doctor. She was afraid of the doctor. And then the next morning, she finally made an appointment. I would have immediately. Well, her physician ran a battery of tests and discovered that she had full-blown stage 4 cancer. But they caught it in the nick of time. Now, if you're like me, you've probably never experienced a divine message delivered in a dream, at least one that you're aware of. But even though God may or may not be speaking to you directly in every dream, dreams can still convey important information about your personal well-being. A stress dream, like I had the other night, could suggest an unresolved emotional issue. A nightmare could reveal a spiritual issue that needs your attention. Now, of course, you shouldn't focus excessively on your dreams, and you definitely want to stay away from New Agey practices involving dream analysis, and for sure, ignore messages in dreams that take the attention away from God or contradict what's taught in the Bible or by the church. But it might also be a good idea to discuss your dreams with someone you trust, a spiritual director, someone in your small group. But whatever you do, pay attention to your dreams. They're important. They could be great opportunities to reflect in a new way on your spiritual growth and relationship with God. Dreams could open up a whole new realm of your spiritual life, and that's because angels are dream weavers, and they are night visitors. It's true. A lot happens to you every night while you're sleeping. And maybe tonight is the night. Sleep well and sweet dreams.